bed patients, and they used to get passes to come to the ball games.
They had a section, yeah.
And they'd put them in the section right near first base. And so, being that I was the closest player to them, they used to ride me something awful.
What a good nature,
they. What were they? I mean, were you a wheelchair and crutch type cases?
Oh, yeah, man. Some of them. Mm-hmm.
They have some on stretchers.
Well, every once in a while, those ones on stretchers, they didn't get on too much. But
probably didn't feel up to it.
Some of the other guys did. And it was a little give and take sometimes, you know. But at the end, they finally come around and sent me a couple cards, you know. And
that's good. But once again, where did you say the Senators trained during the war?
College Park, Maryland, University of Maryland.
How were the conditions?
Which was north of Washington, D.C.
Right.
And we went north, we didn't go south.
Right. How were conditions there? Did they have a good field for you to practice on, or was it chaos?
Very good. Very good. In fact, even the weather was fairly good that spring, that far north. It was a little chilly, but this was 43. And we had just gotten Bob Johnson from the A's, I think, big Indian Bob Johnson. Mm-hmm. I recall him being in spring training with us that year. And also, that was the spring that Early Wynn met his wife. Her father had a Packard agency and a gas station in College Park.
So it was a spring training run, I guess, huh?
For Early when it was, but I was already married.
I see.
Yeah.
Now the fact that you were married, did you have any children at that time?
No.
I see.
No, I didn't.
Do you think that because you were married, you were called a little later than some of the other fellows? I mean, do you think that's what got you through 43, or did you have a good number in the draft?
I had a good number, plus I guess the being married. At that time they weren't, they didn't take the married fellas right away, you know. And I had a high number. I had a call from my draft board just before not a call, but a letter, you know, saying that I was going to be inducted. And it was only weeks before the season closed in 43, and I got in touch with them back here, you know, my local draft board here, mm-hmm. and asked them if I could finish the season. And they gave me permission to finish the season, and then as soon as I got home, I was inducted the 13th of October. The season ended the 2nd of October or
so. They didn't waste any time
drafting
you after it was over. I see. Do you remember anything specific stateside about travel restrictions or food rationing?
Well, we had the ration stamps, you know, for mm-hmm. food and gas. And I don't know. I'm not sure about the food stamps now, but I know we had gas stamps. And as far as traveling goes, we made a few trips that ordinarily they were sleeper trips, you know, and we'd just get an ordinary car and had to sleep in, you know, in a chair. And a few trips we made from Washington to New York to Boston. We were sitting on our bags half the time, in fact, all the way, you know, we couldn't even get a chair seat, let alone a Pullman berth.
Were there a lot of servicemen on the trains?
Yeah.
Even that early?
Yeah.
Did you ever get bumped off a regular train and have to take a troop train? Benny Culp had
no.
a story about
no.
a trip from Boston to Philadelphia with a pot-bellied stove in the middle of one of the cars.
No, I never experienced
in
that.
April.
No, but I can recall the trains being blacked out on the one side, you know, that was exposed to the East Coast all the way up to Boston, you know. They had all the cars blacked out, all the windows were blacked, curtains drawn.
Did they have blackouts in Washington? I know they did in Boston and New York, but what about Washington? In other words, for most of the games during 42 and 43, the Washington home games played during the day,
No, we played quite a few night games. Yeah. Well, they didn't play as many night games as what they do now. When I first went to Washington in 39 and 40, somewhere along there, we didn't have lights. Mm-hmm. And every club in the league didn't have lights. But then they eventually start getting them. And the clubs that did have lights, they would, at first they were playing like seven night games a year, playing each club once.
Once.
And then it went up to 14 night games. And then, and Boston for a long time, you know, didn't go above 14 night games. And then they finally went to 21 night games, where some of the other clubs, like after Washington put in their lights, geez, they went up to 30 night games right away, and eventually up to 50-some night games at home, you know, which is quite a number of night games when you think about it. But
well, back in the early days of night ball, was it hard to see? I mean, is there a big difference between the lighting now and what it was like back then in the early 40s?
Well, I think the lighting, like everything else, is much better now than it was then. Although I felt that the lighting at that time was very good, very good. There were maybe one or two parks that didn't come up to, I won't say it was the standard, but I wouldn't, you know, they wasn't as good as maybe, say, the Yankee Stadium or Detroit. And Boston, when they put in lights, they had very good lighting. So I would say St. Louis, one of the first clubs in the American League to have lights. Their lights weren't very good, but the other parks had good lights. Good lights. I think they've improved on them, just like everything else. They've improved on the ballparks. But I kind of like the ballparks the way they were then, because they all had a certain amount of character, you know, and there's stories that you could tell about the ballparks.
Sure.
As well as the players, that sort of traditional. I don't know 20 years from now whether the kids are going to tell stories about different ballparks because they're all so uniform now.
Right.
that each line is foul lines the same dimension. You won't have any Chinese home runs anymore.
Right. Fenway's a nice exception. I've always been an avid Red Sox fan. In fact, I remember well when you were batting 300 plus with them in the late 50s. And I like Fenway because it is a distinctive park, and the foul lines are close to the playing area, and a guy or gal in Fenway Park feels like he's on top of the game.
Yeah. You get to feel like you know the players, you can see their face, and
right, exactly.
Features much better.
For 225, it's like watching puppets perform in the upper deck at the bat. What were your impressions of Bucky Harris? What kind of a manager was he?
Well, Bucky, I'll always think of him, you know, as a good manager, and he was the first big league manager I ever played under, and I played under him, I guess a couple different times. He left and came back. I guess he was there at least twice while I was there. Quiet. Got his point across with a little sarcasm, you know. He'd give you a little dig once in a while when you needed it. Or if you pulled some kind of a rock, he would let you know about it.
Did he treat all of the players the same, or did he have different techniques for different fellows?
I think he, at that time, was a little more friendly with the older fellows in the club. And I wasn't one of the older fellows. And then when I became an older fellow in the club, the second time he was there, then I noticed that he had changed a little bit and was, I would say, more friendly with everybody on the club at that time. But the first time when I came under him in 39, I think he was, you know, he leaned toward, not that he leaned toward the veterans and playing them, he played the young fellows, because as soon as I got there, he played me, and I was just a raw kid from Class A ball, and I played the rest of the season. But he'd speak to you, and the older fellows, you know, he knew them better. He'd had them longer, and I guess he, on account of that, he was more friendly with them. But he was a good manager, sharp.
He knew the fundamentals.
Oh, yeah.
Cold.
Yeah. And he was a good manager. He managed about 30 years in the big leagues. So I think at the time he retired, he was second to Connie Mack as far as...
Oh, really?
Yeah, managing the major leagues. Connie Mack, McGraw. Not too many more that managed that length of time.
What kind of a fellow was Bluchy?
A little different than Pucky. He was, he had more meetings. He was more outspoken. Used a lot of profanity.
Was he a rah-rah type?
No. But he was a hard-nosed type, you know. He let you know what he was thinking all the time, where Bucky didn't. Bucky was a deep thinker and would only on occasion, you know, give you a little dig. But Ozzy, every day, could be ranting and raving on the bench, where Bucky took things little, you know, like this, you know, just took them in stride.
Yeah.
Where Ozzy didn't. Ozzy was more like this, tense and let it come out. He'd holler and shout.
Was he self-conscious about being a manager? I mean, did he walk around as if he feared for his job?
No. Very confident. He was a great ball player. I've heard people say that Bluesy was one of the better third basemen of his time. There was only one better, and that was Pi Trainer, and that was because he was a better, much better hitter, probably. But he knew that even if he didn't make it as a manager, he was probably going to be with the Griffith family in some capacity, because he had prepared himself, and he was a CPA, and he knew baseball well. When he retired as a manager, they made him the farm director, and then after a couple of years of that, he became the controller of the club, and when they went to Minneapolis, he moved up there with him and continued in that capacity until he retired just about a year ago.
Oh.
So he's been in baseball a long time.
Where is he living now?
In Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. I suppose it must have been topsy-turvy. I know Washington finished 7th in 1942, and then they bounced up to 2nd in 43, then back to the cellar in 44, and they almost won the pennant in 45.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything specific that would account for the change between 7th place in 1942 and 2nd in 1943? I know that early wind blossomed in 43, but... that couldn't have been the only reason. Was it Bluchy? I think that was the year Bluchy took over. Do you think it might have been the change in managers?
Well, he probably was a factor, but I can't think right now what the main reasons were, except that probably a few fellows had better years and they put it all together, you know, the old saying, that if you can get everybody having a good year at the same time, you're going to be contenders.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe what happened.
Did Washington lose less players to the draft between 42 and 43? Do you remember how Washington stacked up against the other clubs?
No, I don't. No. I know, you know, starting 41, 42, players were leaving, you know, Scarborough left, Masterson, Hudson, Travis, Buddy Lewis, and they were, you know, the nucleus of the ball club. And you know, I couldn't really say what the reason, the main reasons were that we went from seventh to second.
So you say you went into service then in October of 43, right after the season ended?
Yes.
And you went in the Navy?
Yes.
Now, during World War II, were you drafted into the Navy, or did you pick the Navy to escape the Army draft like you do these days, or like you did up until a few years ago?
No, I was told to report to the Army up in Philadelphia, and my draft board is here in Delaware County, and we met out at media here, and then a bunch of us went up to the Armory. We went through the line, of course, and we were lined up, and they said,